Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. My name is Dr. John Diamond. This is the show America Unhinged, where we are fervently patriotic and unapologetically Christian. Please join me at AmericaUnhingedRadio.com. You can reach out to us there. You can find my store there. A lot of good videos on the main page, if you'd like to check some of those out, especially too on the media and on the government. Very, very important videos. And then please download that free ebook, An Appeal to Heaven, A Cry for Divine Justice. This is exactly the strategy that the children of Israel used to free themselves from bondage in Egypt. And it's also the exact same strategy that the founding fathers used to free themselves from being enslaved by Britain. So it's something that's theological, it's biblical, it works every time. We just need to learn it and implement it. We are in the middle of Cornwall Alliance Week, and we will be right back after this break.
The global currency collapse will wipe out the dollar and many other assets, and the only things that will maintain value during the global debt reset are those with intrinsic value that do not require governments, corporations, or markets to make good on their obligations. At the top of this list of intrinsic assets is physical gold and silver. These precious metals have outlasted every failed civilization and government in human history, and they are non-digital, which means they still hold value even if the power grid fails. The Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company is my go-to source for physical precious metals that are delivered securely and discreetly into your hands. Visit BrighteonMetals.com to check their live pricing and in-stock coins and bars. Find out why they are my trusted source for physical metals and why they're the official sponsor of Brighteon.tv. BrighteonMetals.com. Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the BiviStick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the BiviStick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 BiviSticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at sat123.com. That's sat123.com. At the Brighteon store, we offer a variety of colloidal silver solutions that we make in Texas using Texas rainwater and specialized circuitry that I personally designed to produce silver ions in purified rainwater. We have a colloidal silver extra strength spray, a silver-based first aid gel, as well as a colloidal silver herbal mouthwash solution that people just rave about. Each one of these is subjected to our rigorous laboratory testing for metals, glyphosate, and microbiology in order to ensure product purity and safety for your health. We manufacture our own silver products right in the heart of Texas and deliver them to you using our own warehousing and fulfillment infrastructure that we built to serve real America. All of us here at Brighteon thank you for your support. Shop our silver products at BrighteonStore.com.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
to get one of these.
If you don't want to eat GMO,
welcome back to America Unhinged. Again, my name is Dr. John Diamond, and please find me at AmericaUnhingedRadio.com. Before we get started, I do want to remind you that Dr. Alan Keyes is available for speaking engagements, so you can reach out there at imtv.us, and we will make the appropriate handshakes there. Please go also visit acts529.com. That is a statement reminding the government that they are not God, that there is a creator who outranks them according to Romans 13, and they need to be wholly reminded of that, I think, just about every generation. So please get your pastor or elder or somebody in the leadership position to sign that. I also want to remind you, Coach Dave Dobemeyer is having a Medical, Legal, and Truth Summit actually March 24th and 25th. If you're in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, a lot of great speakers there, Dr. Sherry Timpenny, Carrie Madej, Tom Renz, the Resistance Chicks, and you can find more about that at CoachDaveLive.com. One other reminder, I am speaking in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area Saturday morning and Sunday morning. At the Legacy Faith Church, and you can find them at legacyfaithchurch.com. Look up under events, and you can see me speaking to both their men's group and to the congregation on Sunday morning. So if you're anywhere near the Harrisburg area, we'd welcome you to visit us out there. So let me just get started. Today, we are in the middle of Cornwall Alliance Week. We've had a great 3 days up to this point. Got a brand new guest for you today, who's going to be talking about some environmental issues. But before I start, let me just read my scripture verse for the day. I'm going to take you back to Exodus 1. And you guys would probably recognize this as Israel being enslaved. Exodus 1, 8 through 11. Just let me read through that real quick. It says, verse 8, "Now there rose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph." Verse 9. "And he said to the people, 'Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we.'" Verse 10, "Come and let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us. So go up out of the land." And then verse 11 says, "Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses." Now, it's a very short paragraph. It's really only about four verses. The whole story's, you know, maybe about 10 verses. But I don't think we understand that this was almost like an incremental type of enslavement. They just kept increasing the burdens, increasing the legislation. And if you study history, you know, there are more instances of people being enslaved by their government from legislation, from these laws and these rules that they just keep piling on top of them, rather than what we think of oftentimes when we think of slavery. We think of going over and putting chains on people and forcing them into servitude. But the history of mankind, and especially the history of governments, have been about, you know, legislative enslavement, that we're going to, every law we pass, you have to obey, ultimately being controlled by, you know, a handful of people. And this is what our founding fathers dealt with. Back in 1766, they passed what was called the American Colonies Act, or the Declaratory Act. And basically in it, it said, "We can bind you in all cases whatsoever." In other words, whatever law we pass, you have to follow. Whatever we say you have to do, you have to do. Whatever we say you're prohibited to do, you're prohibited to do. Now, the founding fathers saw this as nothing less than legislative slavery. All right, because that type of power only belongs to God. So Thomas Paine, when he wrote the Crisis, and I would encourage you, especially if you have Christian schools, homeschools, read the Crisis, teach this to your children. But Thomas Paine says this in his writing, The Crisis. He said, Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to, quote, bind us in all cases whatsoever. And if being bound in that manner is not slavery, then there is not such thing as slavery upon the earth. Even the expression is so impious, for so unlimited a power can belong only to God. So, in America, we have what is supposed to be a limited government. If you study the founding, we did have a limited government that was controlled pretty much by the Constitution. Well, over 250 years, they've continually expanded their power. Read my first book, Fighting the Next American Revolution, until they basically in the 30s started creating all these three-letter organizations, FBI, CIA, IRS, you know, I mean, they're out there, EPA. There are just all these three-letter agencies that are full of bureaucrats that just want to just pass all these policies and all these laws to ultimately control every aspect of our lives. And that is something that we really need to look at and address and be very attentive to. So I want to welcome back Calvin Beister with us from the Cornwall Alliance. He runs the show. He put this whole week together for me, and I'm very appreciative of what he does. And he's brought on several great speakers. Cal, welcome back to the program.
John, thanks very much for having me back. I don't know if I run the show. I think you run the show, but it's been really fun getting the chance to talk with you and our other guests about the matters that Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation is committed to. Our mission is to educate the public and policymakers on biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and the gospel of Jesus Christ. The good news that sinners like me can be reconciled to God through by God's grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone. All of the scholars in our network, just under 70 of them, natural scientists and economists and theologians and philosophers and even some historians and whatnot, all of our scholars are committed to the gospel of Christ. And in addition to that gospel, the good news of reconciliation with God through faith in Christ, there's also, as you put it, John, in some of your writings, the gospel of the kingdom. And that is the simple fact that Christ rules. Jesus Christ is Lord. He's Lord over all. In the days of you know, the apostles, that meant that Caesar was not Lord. And so the Christian church has always been a major challenge to the claims of supremacy of any government. So this is kind of what Cornwall Alliance exists to do, is to remind us of God's claim on our lives and of our duty as stewards over his world to enhance its fruitfulness, its beauty, and its safety to the glory of God and the benefit of our neighbors. And today we're going to focus a bit on a renewed attempt by the federal government to ratchet down restrictions on mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants and various other sources, in the, I think, frankly, exaggerated claim that doing so will protect people from harm from mercury, which is a toxic chemical, but the dangers from it in our environment are extremely slight. So I'm delighted that today we can have Dr. Timothy Terrell. He's a professor of economics at Wofford College, and he did his PhD on environmental regulatory economics. He's been doing a great deal of research and writing in those fields ever since. And he did a marvelous paper for the Cornwall Alliance called The Cost of Good Intentions, the Ethics and Economics of the War on Fossil Fuels, that includes a significant analysis of this claim that mercury emissions are a serious threat. As a matter of fact, the truth is the opposite, that mercury emissions are hardly a threat at all in any use here in America. And the benefit that we get from the energy that is produced by by generating from coal is a tremendous benefit. So it's really delightful to me to have Timothy on with us today. And John, you can take it from there.
All right, Timothy, I'd like to welcome you to the program.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
Hey, and this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to get as many experts as we can because, you know, CNN and Fox, they're going to pull their experts in. They're going to tell them everything that agrees with the UN and all the other bureaucrats and the Obama administration, everybody that just wants to enlarge power of government. And the people like you that are experts and scholars in your field is such an absolute blessing to get to know you and to be able to draw on your expertise. Because again, I'm a theologian. I'm like Cal. I'm well read in a lot of areas, you know, science and history and things of that nature. But to be able to bring people on like you that are, you know, can give us the deep dive, it certainly is a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I'm always excited to talk about this kind of thing. It's important. You know, Cal mentioned the subtitle of the publication that I did a few years ago for them, and it's the cost of good intentions, and I think that's really what we're talking about here. No doubt in my mind that the intentions of most of the people who are involved in this kind of debate are really good on both sides. That you've got people from groups like the Evangelical Environmental Network. I would disagree with them very strongly on their take on the impact of this kind of regulation that we're talking about today and the necessity of it. We would disagree, but I think a lot of people are really misinformed about what's going on really with coal-fired power plants. And that's what I'm hoping I can straighten out with a somewhat technical discussion here, but I think it's important for Christians to be well-informed about what's happening so that we can not make some of those kinds of mistakes.
Yeah, now, I mean, I know you don't know this, but I was a lineman for electric company for 20 years, and our company had many, many coal-fired power plants down along the Ohio River, and so I know that there's been a lot of regulation or attempts at regulation and on a lot of this stuff. And you wrote a good article about the EPA moves to rule on the mercury from power plants. Let me ask you this, since you are the expert. I heard somebody another time saying that, you know, an eruption from a volcano spews more waste into the atmosphere than like all the plants put together, and the nature kind of takes care of itself. Is that the way you see it?
More or less. I mean, it's a misconception that the mercury emissions in the environment are coming exclusively from man-made sources. And I pointed out in my report earlier that, you know, if you look at the power plants that are regulated by the EPA, they're not responsible for the vast majority of the mercury that we end up with in our food chain. Only 16% of the atmospheric mercury in the continental United States comes from the United States and Canada. And if you look at the natural sources, this is huge. I mean, if you look at the forest fires in the United States alone, that emits roughly the same amount of mercury every year as all the US power plants. Yellowstone National Park produces more natural mercury emissions than all eight of Wyoming's coal-fired power plants, according to a study back in 2011. So yeah, natural sources are important, and the impact that we could have, I mean, even assuming that mercury is at a problematic level, which we can talk about later, but even assuming that, you're still talking about a pretty small contribution from American coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I focus on quite a bit myself, and again, you're the expert on emissions and, you know, a lot of the stuff that would be above my pay grade, one thing I focus on is really the authority, you know, that these groups have under the Constitution to even do what they're doing. I mean, most of these three-letter agencies are basically unconstitutional. We, the people, didn't give any of these people these powers. And one of the things I deal with in my book is I talk about, you know, one of the ways that communists, they believe in a strong centralized government. Well, the way they do it is through these bureaucrats and these agencies, regulatory agencies, which, I mean, they're all bureaucrats. And like you said, they may have good intentions, but I think they're misinformed on a lot of stuff. You know, somebody comes in with a report that's bad science, and Cal's been sharing a lot of these, you know, bad science with us all week long. and somebody that with your expertise that comes in and says just the opposite. Let me ask you this. Do you guys get any type of voice within any of these agencies, or have they made their mind up who they're going to listen to?
You know, it's attractive to think that these regulatory agencies are going to the experts. They're coming up with what they honestly think is the best thing for the country, and that they're trying to do things that are going to benefit our health and so forth. And so when I teach about regulation, I come at it from what's called a public choice perspective. And this is a kind of a subfield within economics where we talk about the use of government as a tool. I mean, government is a massively powerful entity, and you've got all of these interest groups that are trying to use that power for their own purposes. And if you're looking at a regulatory agency, it's helpful not to just think about that regulatory agency as being let's figure out how we can do the best thing, but maybe it has something to do with which interest group has held sway over that regulatory agency. There's a theory that regulatory agencies get captured by one or more interest groups, and sometimes it's kind of surprising who those interest groups can be. For example, you've got in the electric power industry, you've got competing sources of electric power that are sometimes warring with each other and trying to use regulation as a way to suppress their competition. So that, yeah, I mean, it helps to come at regulatory economics with a good deal of skepticism.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you did tie the two together, the regulatory and the economics, because you're right. That's exactly what we have. We have competing interests all trying to get the government to do something that would kind of favor them more than others, you know. So that is very, very important. The thing that it really jumps out to me, and this happened during COVID, and we talked about this yesterday with Cowan, about how they always want to use fear and they always want to say they're protecting us, right? So it's like, oh, we're doing this to protect you. I was reading the quote you have in your article from the EPA administrator that said that these are life-saving protections based on science. I mean, and protecting the well-being of our communities. I mean, this is the same nonsense we heard the whole way through COVID for them to justify all their, you know, draconian, tyrannical type of lockdowns. And it doesn't seem to me like there's really any difference from the medical COVID side and the environmental side, what the green stuff. I mean, it seems like they're trying to use the same justification for both. Is that the way you see it?
I think so, and I think they're really counting on people not reading past the immediate headline. So you've got people who are creating these regulations, and they have some headlines that sound really nice. The name of the regulation, proposed regulation, might sound great, but people sometimes have blinders on as to what is really going on behind the scenes. You know, making regulation is like making sausage. You really don't want to see that process if you want to have any kind of faith in the governmental process. People are sometimes, they don't pay much attention to the costs. I see this thinking sometimes with my students. If you say, well, you know, should we have a regulation to address air pollution? It's almost like the perspective is, well, more regulation must always be good. And if it's a regulating, if you're regulating something bad, then you can't have too much. But we have to think about the cost side. And with anything, there is a cost. And to do that, we have to dive into some of the details about what the regulation can actually accomplish, whether regulation is the best means to accomplish that goal, and what the actual impacts are going to be. Sometimes there are unintended side effects. We see this, of course, with the mercury regulation. It's a great example of that kind of thing.
Yeah. If I can put in Edwides here. Another of Cornwall Alliance's fellows is Dr. Ken Chilton. Dr. Chilton taught economics for many, many years in St. Louis at the university there. And he likes to just point out that the question we need people to be willing to ask is, how clean is clean enough, right? And the basic answer to that question is, as clean as you can get it without making the cost of making it cleaner exceed the benefit of making it cleaner. You know? Mm-hmm. And so I sometimes will say to people, why aren't you home disinfecting your bathroom right now? Well, apparently because you think the benefits of being here doing what you're doing now exceed the benefits of disinfecting your bathroom right now. Do you never disinfect your bathroom? Well, I hope not, but you don't do it all the time. So all of us just naturally think this way, but when we get to the level of government and regulatory agencies, people seem to step back from that and they just figure, okay, this agency wouldn't be doing this unless obviously the benefits of this new restriction exceeded the costs. And what Timothy showed in his paper is that in terms of mercury regulation, the case was exactly the opposite. Timothy, you might rehearse a little bit about what you found in terms of what are the actual risks of mercury in terms of blood mercury levels, the real ones versus what EPA was claiming. And then also you did some wonderful research that showed, all right, who were the only people in America who could conceivably be at significant risk from the real risky blood concentration level of mercury. And it had to do with some fisherwomen in a pretty strange circumstance.
Right, yes. So, the EPA uses a kind of what they call a reference dose, which they say if you're exposed to a dose above that amount, then that's going to be too much. That's 5.8 parts per billion, which the Evangelical Environmental Network, when they issued a fact sheet on this a number of years ago, said, well, 1 in 6 babies are born in the United States with harmful levels of mercury in their blood. And they said, well, this is linked to coal-fired power plants. And they came up with this number, 700,000 babies are born with harmful levels of mercury in their blood. And they tried to pitch this as a kind of a pro-life argument. Well, it turns out no harm has been detected at any level below 85 parts per billion, which is 14 times higher than this reference dose. That's a level that studies indicates not found in any American babies. So even at that level, the observable harm is not that you're going to get death or some kind of permanent terrible impairment, but just an almost undetectable delay in neurological development. And the people that would have to be, the kind of circumstances you'd have to be in to be affected by this kind of mercury would be, you'd have to be a subsistence fisher who is eating enormous amounts of wild caught freshwater fish in the United States, especially in some of the areas that are most susceptible to mercury deposition from coal-fired power plants. And this is a tiny, tiny number of people. How many pregnant women are eating the massive amounts of wild-caught freshwater fish that would be necessary to generate that kind of concentration of mercury? I mean, it's such a wild exaggeration that it's terribly misleading as to the actual effects. In fact, since eating fish can be good for you, the effect may have been to scare people away from eating this beneficial nutrition source and to cause a net harm to people's health, not to mention the cost of the regulation that itself can cause indirect deaths and injuries from other sources.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think you nailed it on the head. It's more to scare people away from something than it is, you know, to justify what they're doing. So when we come back, there's a couple other questions I have from some articles that we're going to touch on. So we will be right back after this break.
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Mark.
And I'm Dr. Michelle, and we want to invite you to our new show, Furthermore, where we bring you the tips about hope, the truth about health, and how to preserve your freedom.
So watch us on Brighteon.tv. We can't wait to see you. We can't wait to spend some time with you. So join us on Furthermore.
The boosters are killing millions.
Shadow vaccine sensitivity.
A vaccine holocaust has begun.
We are seeing right now the highest death rates we have ever seen in the history of this business.
The vaccinated have chronic COVID.
Hey folks, guess you heard this morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted.
They're drowning in bioweapons sludge. But a generation of patriots are standing back and standing by. Christopher Key is leading the revolution.
Good morning,
Yeah, but that's why they're poisonous with the water, the food, the supplements.
Confronting corrupt corporations through peaceful protest and righteous resistance. Visit vaccine-police.com to stay informed on pure blood survival and products that keep your loved ones safe. Vaccine-police.com.
All right, welcome back to America Unhinged. During the break, I was going through the article and talking it over. The Associated Press has an article, EPA moves to restore rule on mercury power plants. And one of the ways that I know that you're being hit with propaganda is because they have a script, and they use that script for every crisis. All right, I mean, it's obvious. If you look at what they did with COVID and all the lies we were told for that whole thing, these are the exact same, almost word-for-word lies that were being told about the environment. And I'm going to read right from the Associated Press and what it says. For years, mercury and air toxicity standards have protected the health of Americans, especially children. Okay, there's one of your buzzwords. Low-income communities and communities of color. All right, and then they go on to say that we have to follow the science because we're wanting to protect the health and well-being of all people and all communities. That's exactly the word-for-word nonsense that we heard during COVID. COVID is racist. It affects blacks more than it affects whites. It affects low income. Oh, it definitely affects children when we know it didn't affect children at all, but we have to lock our schools down and mask everybody. This script is the exact same script that they used during COVID, and they're using the exact same script for these environmental fears. It's all about, we got to trust the science. Well, what scientists am I trusting? Am I trusting the ones I've had on all week, or am I trusting the people that are on the government dime telling them what they, you know, what they need to say if they want to keep their jobs? So I want to welcome both Calvin and Timothy back to the program. Timothy, would you like to kind of delve into what I just said there?
Sure. It's interesting that this is, it's almost everything gets kind of hitched to another agenda, maybe to attract some more support, maybe to try to get people to sign on to something without really carefully thinking through the issues. But, you know, it's interesting that we pitched this kind of anti-pollution regulation as being a pro-poor kind of policy when in fact we know that these policies are extremely expensive and that a lot of that burden is going to end up falling on the poor. I mean, if you look at the cost of regulation, it's hard to see exactly how this plays out because a lot of the costs are hidden. But the estimates are that for every $10 to $17 million in annual regulatory costs, there's one extra death in the United States. And a lot of those are going to be in populations that are already vulnerable. When the first mercury regulation was proposed by the EPA, the regulation was estimated to cost the United States economy about $42.5 billion. So if you run a little math on that, that means that you get between 2,500 and 4,250 additional deaths a year just from the regulatory costs. So this is not something that's free. And on top of that, you're talking about the production of energy. You're talking about electricity production. And so a lot of the low-income households that allegedly these proponents of stricter regulation are concerned about are spending a larger fraction of their budget on heating and cooling, on hot water heating, all of these kind of energy-intensive parts of running their household. And so you're hitting the very costs that are one of the larger percentages of a low-income household's budget. I don't see how this is exactly a pro-poor kind of policy.
I mean, I loved what you said in the first segment there. Is the cost of making something clean, does it outweigh everything else? And I think this is what we end up seeing is just over. I mean, we talked about yesterday with Cal, the UN is just a bunch of bureaucrats. They're career bureaucrats who, for one, don't know anything about anything. I mean, the guy running the World Health Organization is a known Marxist who is not even a doctor. He doesn't know anything about medicine, but he's running a whole health organization. And I think you find the exact same thing within what you guys specialize in is the EPA and a lot of these things right here. These are bureaucrats. They're appointed by people. Nobody elected them, and most of them are not even experts in their field. And I've known that being in government for, you know, almost 30 years now. There's a whole lot of people sitting there on committees and on boards who have no background in anything that they're regulating. So to get people like you and get your voice out there, I think is so tremendously important because, you know, a lot of people are not hearing the truths that you guys are bringing forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look follow the money. Where's the money coming from? Where is it going? Who's benefiting from this kind of regulation? And stop assuming that the regulators are trying to honestly act in your best interests. So, for example, one of the organizations that's signed on to this mercury regulation is the Edison Electric Institute, which is a lobbying organization. They spent something like $10.5 million last year on lobbying. And you know, their chief strategy officer worked for a series of US House Democrats after working as a producer at CNN. You can understand why, as a lobbying organization representing utilities, that they have kind of an internal debate going on about which source of electric power is going to be the best. Well, their president was president of the past president of the American Nuclear Energy Council before he started working for Edison Electric Institute. So you've got a lot of these kind of tangled interest groups, lobbying organizations with a huge amount of money at stake. And we can't assume that regulation is going to ignore these kinds of pressures. They're immense. There's billions of dollars at stake with these kinds of regulations.
Yeah, and you nailed it right there with money. You know, the love of money is the root of all evil. Follow the money. Who's benefiting from that? That's one thing that everyone always has to ask. Who is going to benefit from this? So they create a crisis, or they at least a made-up crisis. And that's what I always ask. What is your solution? Well, if your solution is higher taxes, more regulation, and more centralized government, to me, you're just either making up a crisis or just twisting the science to give yourself more power. And that's the thing that really just gets me. And I don't think people want to look behind the curtain, as the Wizard of Oz said.
Yeah.
That's been true of air pollution regulation as a whole in the United States. I mean, you look at the Clean Air Act, who's benefited, you look at the changes to the Clean Air Act over the years, who gains. You've got railroads interested because, of course, they move coal. You've got the nuclear regulatory interests involved. You've got all of these environmental groups that are kind of ideologically interested in these kinds of things. It's to try to untangle this is very difficult for most people. So I think a lot of people just end up looking at the headline and they say, well, you know, this is an air pollution regulation. I don't like air pollution. Therefore, the regulation must be a good thing. And I think that goes back to the responsibility that we have. If we're going to be voting, if we're going to be interested in our own, you know, efforts in the political realm, we have to think more carefully about this. It's our job to not be misinformed, to be able to push back with some real science, and to be able to really think carefully about some of these things before we start going off half-cocked with some kind of idea that we're pro-life because we favor some kind of environmental regulation. And that I think that's a terrible mistake.
Exactly. Cal, you want to chime in there?
Yeah, particularly on this claim that supporting this or that environmental regulation is a matter of being pro-life. This is sometimes brought across as being whole pro-life or pro-life for the whole of life, things like that. You know, the pro-life movement got started as the anti-abortion movement. And in fact, you can look into various dictionaries for the term pro-life, and they all agree basically what it means is being anti-abortion. Well, why not? Why is that? Well, because in every single successful abortion, you wind up with a dead baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the intent. That is what is actually intended in every successful abortion. Now, let's think in terms of, okay, what happens when pollution from a power plant causes somebody to get cancer, and over a 10-year period, that cancer leads to that person's death, right? Well, you have the intended result of the power generation, and that is all the electricity that runs all the home heating and cooling and water heating and the hospital machines that keep people alive longer, all of that sort of thing. And then you have the unintended result, which is the pollution that caused this person's cancer. Well, that person's cancer has to be weighed against the benefits to all the different people who get that electricity. But furthermore, I mean, I was a professor of ethics in seminary, and in ethics, you distinguish carefully between intent and result. And where there's this distinction, we see it, for example, in the difference between premeditated murder as a criminal charge and accidental homicide on the other hand. We're recognizing that there's an ethical difference between intentional harm and unintentional harm. Well, in abortion, as I pointed out, every successful abortion, you have the intentional harm of a dead baby. With pollution, particularly with mercury pollution, and the Evangelical Environmental Network was presenting the regulations against mercury as a pro-life cause. Well, with mercury pollution, as Timothy pointed out in the last segment, what you get is an almost undetectable delay in neurological development. You don't get death anywhere. But besides that, that is unintentional, not intentional. And so to call this pro-life is really to degrade the meaning of pro-life and to undermine the real pro-life movement, the anti-abortion movement. And then in terms of following money, well, all right, let's take the Evangelical Environmental Network as an example on this. Why would they come out this way? Well, interestingly enough, they are a branch of what's called the National Religious Partnership on the Environment, founded back in 1994. And the funding for that, in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars initially and billions of dollars over the roughly 30 years since then, has come almost entirely from very major left-wing foundations, the Tide Foundation, the Hewlett Foundation, George Soros's New America Foundation, and various others, the Open Societies Foundation. All of this comes from there. Well, where did EEN get its funding for the Mercury campaign? Turns out, largely from the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. Ooh. Well, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund has been a major supporter of abortion rights from clear back in the 1960s. And it's also been a major supporter for population control. Now, why do you think RBF would be wanting to give money to EEN? Not because EEN is explicitly pro-abortion. It's not, right? But because RBF, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, figures out, aha, on this issue, EEN is supporting a regulation that we like for our particular reasons, and it happens that those reasons fit with the intent to control population. Because as you increase the cost of living in various different ways, and one of the most important is energy costs, you're going to reduce people's willingness to have children. What is the most common reason given by a couple saying, we don't want more than one child, or we don't want more than two children, or something like that? It is almost invariably related to, how much does it cost to raise that child? Well, as you push up the cost of energy, you push up the cost of everything, because everything we make using energy. And so if you want to control population, if you want to reduce birth rates, then you want to increase the cost of energy. And Rockefeller Brothers Fund and these other organizations have been doing exactly that for decades.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that during the week. I mean, there is a depopulation agenda, and you know, that we are the carbon footprint they're trying to remove. So, I mean, they've said that, the UN and Klaus Schwab and Harari or whatever that guy's name is, Bill Gates, mm-hmm. you know, father was a eugenist. He said that we need to reduce the population by X amount. I mean, there's his TED talk on that. They're not hiding, but I think evangelicals find it almost unthinkable to think that there are a group of people on the planet that actually want to depopulate the planet. And, you know, anytime someone says to me, you know, mankind is basically good, I open up a history book and I'm like, you realize the 20th century was the most murderous century in the history of mankind, and it was all done by governments, right? And if you actually go back and you study everything leading up to that and the lies and the propaganda and everything that was pushed out there, almost all of it was, well, we're doing this for your benefit. You know, even when they got the Jews on the boxcars, what were they telling them? Hey, the war in the East isn't going good, so get on these boxcars so we can get you to safety. I mean, anytime the government says they're doing something for your benefit, you better be very, very cautious.
You know, John, I would love for Timothy to get a chance just to tell about another organization that he's associated with, because I think this is a good place for people to learn about the importance of limited government and of really looking out for the growing restrictions on our liberty from government regulations. And Timothy, that's, of course, the Mises Institute. Many of John's listeners might never have heard of that. Tell them about it a little bit.
Yeah, so the Mises Institute that I've been working with for decades now, which is based in Auburn, Alabama, is named after an Austrian economist, Ludwig von Mises, who fled the Nazis. The Nazis burned his books because he said some things that were opposed to their economic ideas. And so he ended up teaching and writing in the United States for most of his career. And so that organization is based on trying to promote his view of how markets work, of how government intervention in markets tends to make things worse rather than better. You'll find a lot of scholars there that are interested in things like what causes inflation, what causes recessions, how we can look at these kinds of things from a perspective of markets actually work, you know, rather than assuming that markets fail routinely. You'll find a lot of the scholars there are well-versed in the inner workings of markets and the informational disadvantages that governments have. One of the things that put Mises on the map intellectually was what he called the socialist calculation problem, which is to say that governments don't have enough information to make good decisions. I think environmental regulation is a great place to see that. They just don't have enough information to measure costs and benefits well enough. And even if they did have that information, which is hugely problematic by itself, how do we know that their motivations would actually tend to yield a beneficial regulation rather than being subservient to these various interest groups? Anyway, I've worked very happily with the Mises Institute for a long time. I think that if you dive into their website, it's M-I-S-E-S, Mises, M-I-S-E-S.org. You'll find a lot of resources there. And if you're trying to bolster your case for limited government, that's a great place to try to find some resources.
Yeah, and I mean, you just brought up, I mean, what a mouthful of the good stuff that you just brought up there. You know, the people aren't getting the right information. And again, to me, it comes to qualifications, because, you know, you got people in, you know, get elected House, Representative, Senate. They have no qualifications in government. They don't know anything about government, and they don't have any information on anything they're regulating. So you've got a bunch of uneducated, ignorant people. And I don't mean ignorant, stupid, but just they don't understand what they're talking about. And they're passing all these rules, whether it's in, you know, good intentions or not, that's doing more harm than it's good. And that's exactly why we have you guys on, to at least let people know that there's scholars out there that, you know, are well-read, you know, well-credentialed, that know what they're talking about, and it's getting the right information into the right hands. But also, just like you said earlier in the program, Timothy, about, you know, the special interest groups and the lobbying groups, you know. So it's like, hey, I've got this scientifically factual paper here, but I've got this group that's going to give me $300,000 for my campaign. Well, what did I have in my other hand there, type of situation? So I would love for you to make an introduction with this other group. It definitely sounds like an organization that I'd love to help promote and to get on the show. So we got about a minute left. Anything you guys would like to wrap up on?
Go ahead, Timothy.
Well, Cal, you go ahead.
All right. Well, I would just thank John again for having us on through this week. The Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation is online at cornwallalliance.org. That's cornwallalliance.org. We also have a podcast called Created to Reign. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the various different podcast platforms. Created to Reign is a way that we can reach lots of folks and people can enjoy that. We're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we have a regular email newsletter that's always educational. People can sign up for that at cornwallalliance.org. Just scroll down to where you can enter your email address and get our regular updates. We are a nonprofit, and we do depend on the support of individual donors. We don't have any large foundations giving us money. We don't have any big corporations giving us money. So people who want to see our work go on can go to cornwallalliance.org/donate, and we'd be very grateful for that.
Thanks, gentlemen. We will check you out tomorrow. God bless. Everybody else, see you tomorrow.